D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, by Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. The Commodores coming off of a 55-35 win against Utah State on Saturday, and now the Commodores prepare for a road trip to Alabama to take on the Crimson Tide this Saturday afternoon. Clark, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We are doing wonderfully. Thank you. So before we turn our attention to the game on Saturday against Alabama, let's look back at the win on Saturday, a 55-35 win against Utah State. Diego Pavia was sensational. Six total touchdowns, five passing touchdowns, his first 300-yard passing game as a member of your program. I know it's a team effort, Clark, but in which aspects has Diego made the biggest strides as a passer from this season, from last season to this season?
I think the confidence that he's playing with, the way he's seeing the game, it's just slow for him right now. So he's able to kind of pre-snap, make a decision where to go with the ball, and he's been right, and he's been able to hit our receivers and his targets on time and in rhythm, and that's created big plays for us. But I think his performance and his improvement has been great to see. Obviously, he was a dynamic player a year ago for us, and to see him improve is, a testament to really good coaching too. So I credit Tim Beck and Garrett Altman with that, and Diego with his focus. But, I think our offensive line has also played really well. And I think those things go hand in hand, him finding a higher level of performance, but having the time and space to make these decisions. And I just think our pocket's been really clean. And you got to give the O-line credit.
A lot of excitement, Clark, about the game on Saturday after what happened last season. I know that you are probably just starting to sit down and sift through all of the Crimson Tide film, but I would love your initial scouting report on Alabama. What did you see on tape from the Crimson Tide's big win at Georgia over the weekend?
Well, listen, this is a really talented team. It's a good team. There's not a lot of flaws for them offensively. The quarterback's played really well. It seems like he's developed chemistry in the offense. And I think with each week, his performance has strengthened. They were able to possess the ball and convert on third downs against Georgia and maintain possession. I thought they were explosive in their screen game. And, it's just they were all around really solid. I think the offense kind of led the charge. Defensively, they played well too and bowed up when they needed to, made it hard on Georgia to find space. And, this is a good team. It's really going to be about us. It's going to be about how we prepare, how we go down and play. I'm interested in our program show up and playing our best game. And if we do that, we're going to have a chance at the result we want. Obviously, if we don't, then the conversation is going to be about Alabama and their talent and how good they're playing. So we're going to focus on us. And obviously, with an awareness of what makes them good and what their strengths and weaknesses are. But I want our guys to go down playing with confidence and playing our game.
We're talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt's head football coach, coming off a big win this weekend over Utah State. Now they're headed to Tuscaloosa this weekend to face Alabama. Now, Coach, how do you, because you're not around your guys all the time, 24-7. I'm sure they don't want to be around you 24-7. You don't want to be around them either. But this program has really changed. And it's changed quickly, at least, from where I'm looking. How do you keep these guys, especially now that they're 4-0, 5-0 right now, headed to Tuscaloosa, how do you keep these guys from, keeping the main thing the main thing, not listening to all the noise? Because, yes, you have them in the building for a certain amount of time, but once they get out that building, go to class, be around other students, they tend to hear how well they're doing and how great they're doing. Nick Saban once coined it rat poison. How do you keep that away?
This is like our 265th day together as a team. So though we're not together 24/7, I mean, we've spent a ton of time since January 7th building trust and building an awareness and understanding. And also, really setting a high bar for what our expectations are as far as our goals. And I think we're humbled by the extent of our goals. They're all within reach, but gosh, do they require us to get everything we can out every day. And so I'm not going to say that, you know, we're perfectly in focus all the time. I'm not going to sit here and say that 120 guys have their minds in the right place, but I've got a ton of trust in this team. I got a ton of trust in our player leadership. And I know that when the ball gets put down tomorrow in practice, these guys are going to be ready and focused on playing the best we can play against Alabama. There's nothing beyond that for us. It's one climb at a time. It's been that way since January 7th. So we're just every day kind of letting who we are come to the surface rather than allowing these narratives to grab us and force us to change somehow. Narratives come up during the season. Your identity is built from January on.
We're talking to Clark Lee, head coach Vanderbilt, number 16 now in the top 25. Clark, did you check on Tim Corbin today? Did you have to send the trainer over after the little attempt to do the chest bump with no pads on with Diego Pavia coming in hot?
You know, it's funny, Willie. I have not thought about that until it was since the time I saw it. I actually saw it live. And you know what would have been funny? I should have sent all the doctors and trainers over in the moment because I think Corbin would have probably wanted to fight somebody. But hey, he's part of the crew, man. He's become a part of this thing, and obviously, it's been a few times that Diego has been able to celebrate with him. This is the first time that Corbs found himself on the ground, but that's part of playing the game of football. You're gonna get roughed up sometimes.
It does seem like, Tim Corbin would be there regardless of the team's record, right? But it seems like more and more people are gravitating and kind of want to be around it, and that's something that I'm sure that probably wasn't the case, years ago when you were growing up watching or when you became a player, things like that. That's got to feel good. And at the same time, as D-Maze is saying, you have to compartmentalize that and not let that, hurt your focus of any type.
You know, I first of all, just to make sure I'm clear on this, Corbs has been such an incredible resource, therapist. I don't know what other titles I could give him. In my time here, so helpful. And I've got text messages from him back from 21 and 22 where he's encouraging me and he's right there with us the entire time. And so both he and Maggie have been, which I so appreciate them. I think when it comes to the energy that we've created and the people that are taking an interest in our program, I don't take for granted that energy. I don't take for granted the spotlight and that we have a product right now that people are paying attention to. And yet I know that stuff comes and goes as results come and go. So you try to hang on to the things that are permanent, not the things that are impermanent. And, you know, we focus on relationships and process and keeping our heads down and focusing on the work that keeps us pretty busy around here. Again, we enjoy the environment that's been created in our stadium, the excitement. I think today for my kids was like college Jersey day at school, and I got a report back that there were a lot of Vandy shirts walking around the school. So, you know, that's all great. And my goal has always been that Vanderbilt could be a rallying point for the Nashville community, but right here in the heart of the city. We want to keep building on that, but we're going to pay attention to the things that we control. And that's, again, the work that goes into our process, the relationships that we carry out in the field and how we play.
I want to ask about one of your colleagues in Barton Simmons, because it just, as I was watching the game against Utah State, it just, one word just kept coming back into my head. It was depth. There's just so many guys that are coming in. There's three tight end packages. There's two back packages. There's four wide receivers in the game. And there's no drop-off. There's a lot of guys you're using on defense. I don't know all the different position names, but you could see the numbers coming in and out. But the depth compared to when you were playing, Clark, is just night and day. And I know Barton's a big part of that.
Oh, certainly is. And it's like you're saying, it's quality depth. There's no drop-off or very little drop-off from the first group to the third group. We are at multiple positions on both sides of the ball rolling three deep, which is a really good place to be. And we'll lean on that depth as we turn here to the teeth of our schedule. And keep in mind, too, this will be our sixth straight week to start the season without a bye. So it's, you know, those things take a toll, but we've been able to stay fresh by playing a lot of people, and obviously putting distance between us and our opponents has allowed us to rest some of those top line guys in the third and fourth quarter. Barton and his staff, Nick Valdeseri, Kendall Lawson, have done a great job in evaluating both program fits, the people that we want to kind of stitch into the fabric of who we are, and also having the physical tools, the attributes we need to win in the SEC. I think their work in conjunction with our coaching staff over the course of 5 years has created where we sit now, and some of that has been foundational, has been in place since 21-22, or it's been developed since 21-22. Some of that has been added in the last two off seasons, but no matter how we've gotten here, it's the combination of those things that allow us to find the success we have right now. And again, you can't say enough about Barton and his staff and their efforts to position us this way.
Another thing that I like seeing, and I saw it happen with when Tim Corbin was building, you were starting to get this nucleus of very good players from the mid-state, you know, the immediate mid-state, that were for years and years probably not having Vanderbilt high on the list. Maybe they'd grown up and they hadn't seen a whole lot of success in either sport, but that seems to be changing. I go down the list, and, you know, there's Longwell. Of course, Junior Sherrill had the big game for you on Saturday, but you've got a good nucleus of guys that are sort of homegrown, so to speak.
Yeah, Langston Patterson would be a part of that. I mean, we've been able to find guys, and really some of these guys who've kind of, again, been part of the foundational pieces of our program. And I think just like Corbs, like, you know, it was interesting early, and when I took this job, we kind of did a deep dive study of how he built that program and what were the signatures of their progress. And early on, you know, they would – certainly recruit locally, but they would go anywhere and everywhere to find players. And they found players that were good, that maybe were overlooked for whatever reasons, that fit this program. And in time, you know, their success and the competitive edge they played with allowed them to really reach in and get the highest rated players in this area. And in time, that's what ultimately grew them into a national powerhouse. We're looking to do the same thing. You know, it's incremental now, and look, we're at a good position right now. We got a lot of season left in front of us. We got to keep focusing on the product we put on the field. But if we can keep having success here, this is another year for us in the build. And what happens when you have success is you're selling less of a vision and more of a reality when you go recruit. And the thing that's always been true about our place is the best part of Vanderbilt football is our people. And so when we get recruits here, whether it be transfers or high school players and their families, they're always drawn to the energy within the program. Well, now we've created a little bit of ripple and energy outside of the program and an expectation of winning. And again, that's going to help in our efforts to continue to go find the best of the best to be a part of this thing, to help us elevate, again, the product we put on that field.
All right, D-Mace is going to roll his eyes when I ask this question. But I noticed this, and they mentioned this on the broadcast a few times. A lot of plays that I notice, and it's interesting to watch Pavia. He connects all these guys, like all these personnel groupings. He does a great job of sorting it all out and understanding what's supposed to be there. But another thing I noticed is the perimeter blocking by the wide receivers. D-Mace is laughing because anybody's, oh, he's a good blocker. They're like, you're not in there to block. You get, you know, that's not
college. College is a different story. College is a different story. But the NFL, listen, if they're paying you $30 million a year, they ain't paying you $30 million to block. They're
right.
Paying you $30 million to
catch. So this is the soapbox that D-Mace gets on. But it looks like everybody really is committed. I see so many details where a guy's picking up the right guy to open up the play on the perimeter.
So one of our sayings here we talk about, and actually this is one I got from Don Meyer, believe it or not, from back in the days, the game honors toughness. And if you play the game the right way, the game eventually rewards you. And the challenge is to play it the right way every snap and to not press. You have to, especially as a receiver, there's one ball, you know, and it you may be open, but it may not go to you. It may not be the read, whatever. Are you patient enough to allow the play to come to you? And we talk all the time about the culture of our team is represented in the way our receivers block on the perimeter. That is, if you want to talk about one singular shift in our program from 23 to 25, and even the success we had last year, watch the way those receivers are blocking out there on the edges. And the only film I showed yesterday to the team in kind of summation of the Utah State game were offensive plays, explosive offensive plays that happened because we had receivers playing the right way the entire snap. And I would also throw the running backs into that too. Like, for example, the explosive scramble we had to set up the field goal at the end of the first half, Teddy Alexander scan protects and absolutely just obliterates the blitzer. And then Diego escapes the pocket, and who's blocking down the field to get him the extra 10 yards to get into field goal range is Junior Sherrill. Well, Junior Sherrill had 3 touchdown receptions in the game. There's a guy who plays the right way every snap. And you can go on and on. Richie Hoskins has a touchdown catch in the game where he beasts through a tackle and scores. You watch Richie Hoskins play the game, down in, down out, he's playing the right way. So I appreciate you bringing it up, Willie. I know D. Mace's feelings on it, and I don't disagree with him, too. You know, shoot, if I had D. Mace out there, we'd just tell him to go deep. We'd get the ball thrown. But as far as the culture of our team, you know, I do feel like it's represented in the way those guys play. They're scrappy. They're tough. That's who we are, I told Junior, I said the only thing I want different on that long scramble is go ahead and finish him off and put that guy in the Gatorade. You know, like we want to be known for how we finish those blocks off and make it miserable on those DBs on the perimeter.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee has been our guest on D-Maze, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Monday at 4 o'clock. See, I did it again. That's,
there we go.
We need the shirt.
It's sinking in.
For yeah. Clark.
You're all about T-shirts.
I'm selling a lot of T-shirts today. That has nothing to do with Clark, of course. Clark, good luck on Saturday against Alabama.
Thanks, guys. Good to be with y'all.
Vanderbilt, number 16 Vanderbilt, at number 10 Alabama, 2:30 p.m. at Bryant-Denny Stadium. College game day will be in Tuscaloosa on Saturday as well. By the way, last I checked, ESPN bet Alabama minus 10.5.
I would say that this will be the biggest spotlight game. I don't know what's going to happen in the game, but this is going to be the biggest spotlight game that Vanderbilt has ever played in, arguably, based on the TV era, right? I mean, I don't know what it was like in the pre-World War II when Vanderbilt had really good teams, Red Sanders and all that. But honestly, has there ever been a bigger spotlight game that they've been in?
I don't think
number 16 versus number 10.
That's a better question for you, Vanderbilt historian.
No, but
I can't think of one.
Been here long enough to know that Vandy, I mean, based on their history, but at least the last 20 years, they hadn't played in a game of this magnitude, meaning, you know, playing Alabama, and they're so closely ranked together.
Right, and Alabama coming off of a giant win
exactly
as well. Game day being there. It's the 2:30 game, and it's not 2:30 because, hey, there's a couple games. You're supposed to get Vanderbilt in there somewhere. This is
the best marquee
game at 2:30 that the league has. It's huge.
615-737-1025. We will continue the Vanderbilt conversation coming up next because I think Diego Pavia belongs in a certain college football conversation. We'll do that next. Your thoughts on Vanderbilt, the undefeated Commodores, heading to Tuscaloosa this Saturday, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Oh, hold on. Diego's going to sing the alma mater.
Western border, reared against the sky. Proudly stands our alma mater as the years roll by. Forward ever be our watchword, conquer and prevail. Hail to thee, our alma mater, Vanderbilt, all hail.
Should they add Vandy, we turn at the end of the alma mater?
They got to add something, that's for sure.
Willie, your grade on Diego Pavia's rendition.
I admire that he knew all the words to the song.
Which is a nice way of saying singing is not his forte.
Probably not.
He's not winning American Idol, that's for sure.
Well, he could have been the guy that got on the show for the wrong reasons, being a little bit out of tune. But I love the effort. I love the effort.
A for effort. Yeah. I mean, listen.
He's willing to do it. He's put it. It was all heart.
I'm with you, Willie. He knew the song.
I think every player on that team's got to
exactly.
know the song.
That's all the battle right there, that you know the song.
He hadn't been there for 4 years. It's only his second year he knows the song.
So, hey, man, for him to get on national television and singing and he know it, I don't care how he sounds. He just knows it.
One thing that Diego Pavia does not lack is confidence. And I'm starting to wonder, and I know it's only roughly halfway through the college football season, but I am starting to wonder if Diego Pavia should be in the Heisman Trophy conversation. Diego Pavia is third in the nation in QBR at 88.4 behind Jaden Maiava of USC, hopefully I pronounced that correctly, and CJ Carr of Notre Dame. I'm looking at ESPN Bet right now. Diego Pavia plus 1,800 to win the Heisman Trophy, tied with Gunnar Stockton, Julian Sayin, and Trinidad Chambliss. Dante Moore, the favorite at plus 750. Jeremiah Smith plus 1,000. Ty Simpson plus 1,000. Carson Beck plus 1,200. Fernando Mendoza plus 1,400. So the thing is, a lot of the quarterbacks we expected to be firmly in the mix have started off slowly. Kate Klubnik, Garrett Nussmeier, Arch Manning. So the door is ajar for someone to take the lead in the Heisman Trophy race. I firmly believe Diego Pavia should be in it at the moment. We'll see what happens once SEC play begins in earnest on Saturday. But so far, Diego Pavia, Willie, absolutely deserves to be in that Heisman Trophy conversation.
Well, what he's done so far is he has set the table to get into the conversation. We know to go from this point to actually being a candidate, how do you win the Heisman? You play well in the spotlight games.
Yes.
And they've got the spotlight games. They've got the biggest one they've ever played coming up on Saturday for all the reasons we said. They beat Alabama last year. Pavia is a guy that people know. Pavia has played well. They've taken care of business. Alabama has recovered from a loss that people thought that might be it, but they've bounced back and they look really good. So this is not a weak Alabama at all. And Alabama might be too strong for him, but this is the opportunity that they've created for themselves. I don't know if he's going to win it, but I admire D-Mace that he has come back, and Adam asked the question, he has come back a better player, that he's a better passer than he was last year. They've got better pieces around him for sure. But what I like is he's able, as much of a knucklehead as he acts sometimes, you know, he likes acting the fool. Mm-hmm. He puts himself out there. He's got personality. He's got the charisma. All of that's good. But if you really watch him play, he's tough, but he also is a very cerebral quarterback. He understands that offense like the back of his hand. And there's a lot going on in that offense.
Yeah, there's a bunch going on. He's like a 10-year veteran in the NFL that's been with a court. They have the relationship, say, like a – and people, I'm not comparing him to this person. I'm just saying the relationship as far as knowing the offense. I think he knows he know his offense as well as Patrick Mahomes knows his offense. And when you know that, you are able to do some things within that offense that, say, a younger player can't do. You see the whole field. You know, when you're a good athlete and you're a good quarterback, when you know things like the back of your hand, like you know it like second nature, you're able to play free. You're able to let your athleticism. And regardless of how, you know, Pavia, he doesn't look like your traditional quarterback. But he gives you all of himself because he understands the offense so much. To whereas he scans the field. He does a great job at least the first five games of scanning the field and finding his wide open receivers or his receivers. You think Aguilar is playing well in Knoxville. I would tend to say that Diego is playing even better than Tennessee's quarterback from this point, from this standpoint. He's everything for Vandy. Like, everything goes through him, running, passing, everything. It's not that way in Tennessee. They got running backs that can just go for it. They got five-star running backs. But Diego, they got good backs, but everything runs through him. So I'm not surprised that he should be, if you're talking about the most valuable player on your team, that's the best player, he's probably the best player in college football right now.
In terms of value to his team, he might be
the best. And even just in his skill, because it doesn't look pretty. It doesn't look like a Lamar Jackson when he runs or some of these other quarterbacks. It doesn't look like, you know, Burrow when he throws the ball.
Yeah, it's not electrifying
exactly.
with talent.
Exactly. He doesn't look like, you know, Reed at Texas A&M or one of these other quarterbacks that are projected to go high. He doesn't look, but he gets the job done. And to me, that is more, that's worth anything else that you can probably have on your team, is that this guy has found a way to be everything for this team that they need. He is the most important player from what I've seen in college, at least in the SEC. I believe he's the most important player to his team than anybody in the SEC.
And, Adam, they play five of the last seven against top 25 teams, current top 25 teams. And I would say that Auburn is a fringe and could end up back in.
They could be back
in the top 25 at some point. But this is what I admire the most. Remember Coach Willie's thing in the SEC media days when Diego Pavia was strutting through there. And I noticed that after the season was over last year, he was everywhere. He was at Predators games, on the glass. You know, that he went from being an unknown to a guy that was making a lot of money for the NIL like a lot of kids are. But he is not. I was concerned, is he going to be too much about the attention that he's now getting? It can be intoxicating. But he has not lost the edge. He has not lost the desire to get better. And that is admirable, especially with all the pitfalls that can come with the attention you get, the money you get. It's life-changing stuff. But he is still the same kind of guy that I see, you know, with his team. He rallies the guys, and he's got all these things we're talking about on the field.
He reminds me of Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma. He's not as talented as Baker Mayfield, but that the attitude, the bravado, the brassness, the planting the flag on in your field, that's the talking, then backing it up, regardless of who it is, that's Baker Mayfield. He's nothing but a Baker Mayfield, but not as skilled passing the football. But again, I think right now, if I had a vote, I would vote him as the Heisman. If you had to end it right now, I would vote him as the Heisman winner. Because of – now, I get it. There's still a lot of games left to play, and he's going to have to prove himself once he gets deep in the SEC. They've already played an SEC game. But based upon what I've seen, he is the front runner for the Heisman. It may change. But right now, from what I've seen, him, he's Mr. Everything. His team's good. I get his team plays hard. Those guys are doing well. They're well coached. But what he's doing, we have not seen this on West End ever, at least from my standpoint. I haven't seen this from anybody in the state of Tennessee, period, from a quarterback standpoint, all that he's doing.
The last time Vanderbilt participated in a college game day was all the way back in 2008. Vanderbilt hosted Auburn. The Commodores won. And improved to number 13 in the AP Top 25, which was its highest ranking ever in the AP poll. If Vanderbilt can pull this off on Saturday and defeat Alabama again in Tuscaloosa this time And by the way, the line at the moment is Alabama minus 10.5. If Vanderbilt can win this game, they will absolutely catapult ahead of 13th in the AP poll. So I will rely on Willie for the historical significance, but based on what he said, and we were talking about this before the show, this could be the most pivotal game in Vanderbilt football history.
I don't know if it's pivotal as much as it's the spotlight. It's must watch, right?
That's,
because of Pavia, it's fair. Because of Alabama, it's because of its they've created a chapter two after the goalposts being thrown in the Cumberland, all of the shock and amazement of that win last year. Because here's the deal, and this you play Alabama, you got LSU coming to Nashville the next week, and then you've got Missouri, and then you've got this murderer's row of a schedule.
Well,
at Texas, you've got
Clark
this unreal.
The teeth of their schedule is right now. But even with that, like, I look at it from this standpoint. I want Vandy to win. I think I'm going to pick them to win, and I'm saying that right now. But I think more importantly, it's a big spotlight like this. It needs to be a game. It needs to be a game. It doesn't need to be, unless it's Vandy blowing them out, but it doesn't need to be an Alabama 42, Vandy 20. It doesn't need it. This game needs to stay close. I think that would – there's no more – I know Clark is not looking for a moral victory. He will probably close his ears with me saying this, but I'm not on the team, so I can, you know, say this would be my opinion. I want them to win. I think they will win. But more importantly, I think it's how they play against Alabama. Now that everybody's watching, you said it's 2:30 game. Everybody's watching.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Your thoughts on Vanderbilt's upcoming matchup against Alabama, Diego Pavia, and where he belongs in the Heisman Trophy conversation. Again, 6 touchdowns for Diego Pavia against Utah State. 5 through the air. 1 on the ground. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get back into the Titans. And I want to follow up on something I asked Teron Davenport in the first hour about Cam Ward. So we'll do that next. 615-737-1025. Our show is presented by Bax Homeworks. Financing options are available to make your remodel easier than you think with Bax Homeworks. Get a free estimate right now at baxhomeworks.com.
Is this the most frustrating period you can recall going through football?
I would say no. I had a lot of frustrations in my past, whether it was high school to college. But I just want to win. When was the last time Tennessee won? I don't know. I'm trying to win. Everybody in this locker room, we want to win. And we have to win. That's really what it comes down to, no matter how we got to do it. At some point, like, we have to turn the tide and we have to start with the games.
That was a visibly frustrated Cam Ward after the Titans' 26-0 loss to the Houston Texans yesterday. By the way, the last time the Texans had a shutout was November 28th, 2010, also against the Titans. Rusty Smith at quarterback for the Titans. Rusty Smith was catching strays near the end of the broadcast yesterday. So it had been nearly 15 years since the Houston Texans had a shutout. So congratulations, Titans. You got that going for you, I guess.
Yeah, they do. Unfortunately for them, so much so that they drug Rusty in there. What's the funniest part about that is that who was the other guy? I forget his name now. That was doing the game.
Ross Tucker.
Yeah, Ross Tucker. Ross Tucker says, who is Rusty Smith?
Yeah, a good question.
I'm like, why is Rusty... Rusty shouldn't be a part of this. He's not on his team now. But I guess it's gotten that bad where they have to bring up, you know, your transgressions from the past.
I want to get to the point about Cam Ward, but first let's go to Dylan in Antioch on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Dylan, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Yeah, just wanted to comment real quick. There was a play, I think it was – it may have been like 2nd and 10, and it was Julius Chestnut, little handoff, give it to him. He loses like 2 yards. The guy comes off the corner, totally uncovered, gets blown up. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen. Like just at the time and the moment, even Ross Tucker, who I really like, by the way, is like, I don't know what they were doing there. So he gives away play calling. you score 0 points. And just real quickly here, too, a lot of people are saying that this is worse than it was in Hanera. I don't think it's gotten there yet. We may be a little prisoner at the moment there. I mean, it's close, but it's not that bad yet. But, man, that play, it just blew my mind. And also, Aziz Alshire, you got to call that. It's like goons in hockey. You got to watch out for those guys. Anyway, I will hang up. Love the show, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Dylan. I think Dylan may be referring to the play midway through the third quarter. The Titans are down 6 points, and they hand it off to Julius Chestnut on 3rd and 12. I thought that was a cowardly play call.
But they can't block.
Yeah,
they cannot block. This is the dilemma you're in. So you run a 3rd and 12, you do a 5-step drop, and your quarterback is going to be scrambling around, winging it down the field, trying to make a miraculous play. Those are your choices. I'm with you, Adam. It is a giveaway. But I say to myself almost every play. Now, I'm curious to see if they can get Latham back and have the five play together for 3 or 4 weeks, how much better it could look. Because right now, you can't run anything. It's so hard and painful to watch because I feel for everybody. You can sense the frustration in Ward. You certainly can sense the frustration in Callahan and the coaching staff, but your options are so limited.
Let's go to Gil on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Gil, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good, thank you.
Hey, well, I don't want them to take off on me or everybody be mad at me, but I feel that we should keep Callahan for the rest of the year. I mean, I mean, it's his offense. I don't see anybody on the coaching staff that could take over. We can't hire somebody else from the outside. But with that being said, I think all the pressure needs to go on Amy Adams to build a foundation, because we can't even build a foundation with this team. And it's like it's frustrating that year after year we get defensive coordinators, coaches, and our players are all over the place. So now we have to get another coach that's going to say, well, these aren't my players. So now we have to figure players and all that out. But I think that I wouldn't spend any more money. I would watch the games. I wouldn't spend any more money on the Titans to give her a statement. But she needs to get it together and get our up top first to build our foundation. And then from that point on, I think we can move forward. But Callahan's not the guy. But as long as he doesn't let Cam Ward get hurt, and he can just get a little better, I don't even care if we win. I just think that's the way to go.
Thank you for the call, Gil. By the way, Matthew from Jolton on our text line says, I had Rusty Smith out of my mind, and hearing his name on the broadcast brought back so many bad memories.
I told you. I mean, Rusty had no reason to be brought up in this conversation, but he was.
And I understand Gil's point about Amy Adams drunk. I know a lot of you are feeling frustrated about the ownership for the Titans, and I think that's a conversation we can continue to have. I'm going to park it, however, for the moment, because I do want to get back to something I asked Teron Davenport. And I'll be honest with you, I was a bit surprised by his response. So I asked Teron Davenport in our first hour if Cam Ward's public display of frustration, I asked if that should set off alarm bells inside the Titans facility. And he said, no, why would it? Here was the point I was trying to make. What must ownership be thinking when their number one pick quarterback is saying, and I quote, we ass, after a game? And ownership knows that the team is bad, but I wonder if they should be worried about Ward feeling discontented 4 games into his NFL career.
Well, if that's what, you know, triggers you, then, I mean, you're going to be triggered each and every time after a while. Because, listen, I understand his frustrations, but, and he has every right to say those things. But if I'm the owner, I'm not making a decision based on what my quarterback is saying. Because it's the same quarterback, too, that says, you know, I want Brian Callahan to be here, you know, as long as I'm here, you know, coaching me and everything else. So people quickly forgot about that. So if I'm an owner, you know, yeah, you hear about it, but I'm not making no decision based on, you know, what my rookie quarterback has said. And again, I'm not upset about it at all as an owner. I'm just not making a decision based on what he's saying. If a decision is made, it's based on the product on the field, not because of what my quarterback, because remember, again, it's the same quarterback that just about a month and a half ago said he wanted Brian Callahan to be his guy. So there you go.
I would, again, I'm with the caller, and I think with you, D-Mace, is the patience about not giving in to the noise of get him out of there, get a new coach. And as it relates to what you are bringing up, Adam, it's a great question. Because I think in the history of sports, there probably have been owners that would see something like that and say, oh my gosh, I've got to do something. My prized possession, the guy that everything's riding on, is ticked off. You know what? What I would be alarmed about is not what he showed there. Mm-hmm. I love the passion, and I love the way he's channeling it. He's not calling out his teammates. He's not calling out his coaches. He's calling out everybody, starting with him. Mm-hmm. And he's got every reason to say, man, I'm a rookie in this league. I'm not getting any help, because that's what we're all seeing.
Yeah.
This is a guy running for his life on every play, and he's doing the best he can. He's learning, and I think he's got a chance to be pretty good. Mm-hmm. He's got a rocket of an arm. He's got a competitive edge. He's got the willingness to study. So they got to bring him through this fire. I would be concerned if the opposite were happening, if he were up there defeated and saying, I don't know what to do. I got no answers.
Yeah.
That's when I would be concerned. I'm not concerned at all. I'm with Teron. I'm not concerned where it is now. But it's only been 4 weeks. Let's check back in another month.
It's only been 4 weeks?
Yes.
You mean I have to watch 13 more of these?
Yes. Well, see, this is the thing.
Oh, my God.
This is why you have to – where we are sitting January 1st is really going to be the key. They've got to get through this fire. And it starts with finding guys who can block. You've got to pray that Latham can come back. And you got to pray that Zeitler doesn't age out. Mm-hmm. You got to pray that Dan Moore can start playing a little bit better. I don't know about the illness he had, but he was awful.
He hasn't been good.
I think there was some talk that he wouldn't play, right? He got sick. And so, we've all played sick at one time. And there's sometimes you play sick and you're okay. Sometimes you're not okay.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been playing good all season. Right. He hasn't been playing well when he's healthy. But they've got to get more out of that offensive line, or else they're going to be like this every week.
They got to block. Yeah, they
got
to get more out of this roster. Again, I get, and I'm not. There's no necessarily pushback when callers call in or text in and say, you know, he needs to be replaced. But my counter to that is, listen, this roster isn't good, and everybody knew that. Everybody that's followed this team, know this team, they knew that. But they also knew that they had about 10 guys on this team that if they played to the caliber of, you know, of what their capabilities are, if they stay healthy, then this team, they can win some games or be competitive in a lot of games. But not only are you a bad roster again, but the people that you are counting on, majority of those guys are either not playing up to the potential or the expectation, or they're not on the field. One or the other. The two or three guys, four guys that are playing well is not enough. We need all, and on a roster like this, you don't need four of the 10 to play well. You need 10 of the 10 or 12 to play well.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We will take your reaction on the Titans. Their 10th consecutive loss over two seasons, if I have my math right. They lose 26-0 to the Houston Texans, their first shutout loss in nearly 6 years. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, there is one player who is showing up for the Tennessee Titans. So I think it's time for the Titans to trade him. We'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Today we are broadcasting live at the all-new Circus Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall. Head up here and watch the Jets, Dolphins, or the Bengals-Broncos Monday Night Football games. Plus, find out more details on Circus' giveaway of our trip to Las Vegas for the Titans-Raiders game in October.